The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of the disobedient daughter who married a skull features cannibalism and mutilation. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Undulue knelt by the roaring fire at the center of the cavern. He licked his lips and looked at the corpse at his feet. It belonged to a young man who'd been lost at sea. His loss was Undulue's gain. Bodies that weren't buried properly were sent here to the land of the spirits. There was nothing like an unburied corpse, slow roasting over a fire. Undulue heard footsteps at the mouth of the cavern. He gripped the man's shoulder. He wasn't going to give up his dinner without a fight. When he heard his old friend, he relaxed. The cursed skull was a schemer, but he couldn't steal anything without a body. A figure emerged from the fog, and Undulue was shocked to see the grinning white skull perched atop the body of a human man. He raised his eyebrows and asked his friend where he'd gotten his new body. The skull said he had business in the land of the living. He needed a good-looking body, so he borrowed some parts. Undulue frowned and noted that he would also need a face if he wanted to blend in with the living. The skull gestured to the body and asked, "You mean a face like that one?" Undulue shook his head. That one was his dinner. The skull sank to his brand new knees, saying, "Please, I'll bring it back in a few weeks, and I might just bring something else, too." Undulue asked what he meant, but the skull just grinned. Undulue would have to agree if he wanted to find out. He sighed. Sometimes the skull could be so charming that it was hard to refuse him. The skull pulled out a machete and sliced off the corpse's skin. He plastered it onto his head and asked how he looked. Undulue looked him over and admitted begrudgingly, "You are one handsome devil." I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Tales for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Tales in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram, at Parcast, and Twitter, at Parcast Network. This week's story is The Disobedient Daughter Who Married a Skull. It's an ancient Nigerian morality tale about a beautiful young woman who meets a handsome young man with a terrible secret. In the end, she finds that the price of her vanity just might be her life. The first English translation of The Disobedient Daughter Who Married a Skull was published in a book titled Folk Stories from Southern Nigeria. It was written in 1910 by the British District Commissioner of Southern Nigeria, a man named Elphinstone Dayrell. British imperialism in Nigeria was defined by a steady insinuation of English customs into all aspects of Nigerian life. It began with missionaries and traders being sent to make alliances with indigenous groups. Colonists targeted tribes who lacked political power and wouldn't pose a threat to European conquest. The result of this slow and insidious colonialism was that the English were able to rule Nigeria with very little military force. In his role as district commissioner, Elphinstone Dayrell didn't have much concrete power. He was enabled by a number of indigenous puppet governments created over 200 years of colonial infiltration. One of those governments belonged to the Efik people of southeastern Nigeria. In the 1600s, the Efik split off from the kingdom of the Ibibio after migrating from central Nigeria toward the coastal areas and the Calabar River. But given that our story takes place in Calabar, it's safe to assume that it is an Efik story. Dayrell doesn't provide a date for the story's origin, but the disobedient daughter contains clues that give the reader a sense of its age. In the early 1900s, the Efik conversion to Christianity was already well underway. If the story were from the colonial era, it likely would not have contained references to a belief in the Efik spirit world. Furthermore, the main character has a choice in who she marries. That is a distinctively Efik tradition. It's unlikely that this narrative would have emerged from the Eurocentric social milieu that took hold of Efik communities during the time of British colonialism. Based on these context clues, it's easy to imagine that the story of the disobedient daughter comes from a time before European colonization, emerging from an era when prosperous kingdoms fought for rule of southern Nigeria. Palaces were filled with intricate bronze statuary, bustling marketplaces thrived at the centers of great cities, and when night fell, children gathered around the fire to hear tales of the dark spirits who inhabited Obio Ekpo, the realm of the dead. Afyong sat between her mother and father on a bench of polished clay. Her suitor Ekene sat across from her. He'd come with his father and grandfather to ask for permission to marry her. Ekene was a successful merchant, known far and wide for his humor and kindness. He also happened to be the least attractive man from Calabar to the Bornu Empire. His pockmarked skin was greasy and covered in pimples, and he was at least 4 inches too short. Ekene smiled, revealing a mouthful of crooked yellow teeth. Finally, after an interminable moment of silence, he spoke.
Afyong, I've loved you for years. If I could be your husband, it would make me the happiest man in Calabar.
Afyong looked to her father, who was grinning in delight, and then to her mother, Ezine, who was mouthing the word, yes. She replied that her mother had always told her not to marry a man who was overly confident. Any man who looked like him and yet had the confidence to ask to marry her must think he was a god. So on the advice of her own mother, she would have to say no. Once Ekene had gone, Afyong's father, Efyong, kicked over one of the woven cane chairs and stormed out of the room. Ezine glared at her daughter and asked, "Why must you be this way?" Afyong shrugged. She stood up and looked into one of the mirrors pressed into the clay walls. She couldn't be expected to marry just anyone. Afyong was one of the most beautiful women in the village. She had luminous skin, a halo of jet black hair, and a radiant smile that lit up any room she walked into. Afyong said she was just waiting for a man who was deserving of her. Ezine snorted, saying,
"You mean someone who's just as shallow and useless as you are."
Afyong rolled her eyes. She couldn't be blamed if everyone her parents suggested looked like they'd crawled out of a swamp. Afyong grabbed several brass rods from the copper pot on the porch. She told her mother she was going to the market. As she left the house, her mother called after her.
"Go ahead. Keep looking for handsome men at the market. You might just catch the eye of the stupid, spoiled donkey's ass you're looking for."
When Afyong arrived at the large, thatched roof pavilion in the town square, she was pleased to see that the market was still in full swing. Vendors had set up booths all along the sides of the pavilion. In the square, several men were playing pot drums and trumpets to an upbeat tempo. She was disappointed to realize that she recognized all the faces in the crowd. There wasn't a single man in Calabar who was worth her time. The most handsome was probably Ema, the son of the coppersmith, but even he had an ugly gap in his front teeth. Afyang didn't want to marry just anybody. She wanted her husband to be the envy of all the girls in town. She wanted him to be so handsome and charismatic that he could charm a wasp into not stinging. Afyang was wandering along the rows when a new stall caught her eye. It was crowded with pots of unzu, carmine, and tangele. She reached to pick up one of the little bottles. As she did, a deep voice whispered in her ear, "Anyone with your looks doesn't need to waste money on makeup." Afyang looked up into the face of a young man she had never seen before. He had high cheekbones and a chiseled chin. His chest was broad and strong, and he had a boyish smile that made her go weak in the knees. She blushed and told him she'd never seen tangele that was such a lovely shade of silver. The man thanked her for the compliment. He told her his name was Obi, and this was his stall. He'd come from a faraway land to sell his wares in Calabar. For years, he'd heard that the Calabar marketplace was the best around. People said it had the most stalls, the best music, and the prettiest girls. Afyang looked away shyly and asked if the market had lived up to Obi's expectations. He laughed. "Not at all, actually. There are fewer stalls than I imagined, and the band sounds like a bunch of dying goats. The girls, though, have far exceeded my expectations. At least one of them has." Afyang's heart gave a little flutter. So many good-looking men never bothered to be witty, but she could tell he was different. Afyang and Obi spent the rest of the afternoon together. They wandered through the streets of Old Calabar and down toward the river. They didn't say much to each other, but Afyang didn't mind. She supposed that when you meet the right person, there's no need for words. As they approached the river's edge, Obi pulled a purple hibiscus flower from a nearby tree. He presented it to Afyang and asked how she would feel if he asked for permission to marry her. Afyang felt as if her heart would leap out of her chest. She laughed in delight and took Obi's hand. She told him to follow her. It wasn't traditional for a man to propose on the first day he met a girl, but who cared about tradition when true love was involved? As they meandered toward her parents' house, a glint appeared in Obi's eyes. Afyang took it for passion, but anyone else would have known that this look was hunger. Next, Afyang gets everything she ever asked for. Now, back to the story. Afyang had almost given up hope of ever finding a husband. She couldn't believe how lucky she was to have met Obi. He was handsome, charming, and proposed within hours of meeting her. Obi presented himself to Afyang's parents that afternoon. The young couple sat across from Afyang's father and mother. Ezine gave Obi a disparaging look and said, "It's traditional for the groom to bring his family to meet the bride's family. Don't you have anyone, or do our traditions not matter to you?" Obi flashed an apologetic smile. He explained that only his mother was still alive, but she lived very far away and was too weak to travel. He said he understood that Efik tradition was for the husband to pay a bride price, what his people called a dowry. He'd heard the amount was set according to the bride's stature. Obi could see they were a respectable family of considerable position. Since he wished to pay Afyang the utmost respect, he asked them to set the price as high as they liked. He looked wistfully at Afyang and told her mother he would give every rod in Calabar to have her as his wife. Ezine gave him a thin-lipped smile and said, "In that case, I'll set the bride price at every rod in Calabar." Afyang stamped her foot and whined for her mother to be fair. Her father, Efyang, sighed and rubbed his forehead. He turned to his daughter and asked if she truly wished to marry this man she'd just met. Afyang nodded. Her father raised his eyebrows and asked,
"You really want to put your fate in the hands of a man whose family you do not know, who you have never heard of before today, and who may well be a madman or a murderer?"
Afyang rolled her eyes and looked at her fingernails. She told her father none of that mattered because she loved him. Afyang burst out in anger.
"Well, in that case, go ahead. And as for the bride price, don't even worry about it. I'd pay you to take such a stupid daughter off my hands."
He stood up and stormed out of the room. Afyang looked gleefully to her mother, who was hunched over with her head in her hands. It looked like they had a wedding to plan. Afyang had always hoped that her wedding would be the largest and most extravagant affair anyone in Calabar had ever seen. She'd pictured her hair braided into fetching twists and adorned with bronze ornaments. She'd be surrounded by an adoring crowd, and her parents would lay out a feast of oysters, shrimp, and a big pot of Eddie Kong Ekong soup. She was sorely disappointed. Afyang refused to invite any of their friends or relatives, and the only food provided was a sad-looking dish of boiled eggs on a bed of afong leaves. Afyang's mother wouldn't even help her fix her hair, so the elaborate crown of braids turned out lopsided. After the traditional sacrifice of the tortoise and goat, Obi and Afyang stood around awkwardly with her mother and father. Obi asked his new father-in-law if he had any advice for married life. Afyang told Obi only one thing.
"Never have children. They'll only disappoint you."
After the wedding, Obi pulled her aside and told her that he couldn't take much more of her openly disapproving parents. He said they should travel back to his home as soon as possible. Afyang looked over at her mother and father. They were gathered around the goat carcass, probably discussing how it was too small or too hairy or just generally disappointing to them. She looked up into Obi's handsome brown eyes and told him they would leave tomorrow. Ezine barely slept on the night after her daughter's wedding. There was something she didn't like about Obi. It wasn't just that he was from a faraway land. That was why her husband didn't like the young man. But for Ezine, it was something far more insidious. Ever since she'd met him, she'd felt like she couldn't shake a creeping feeling of doom. Her daughter wouldn't listen to her parents, but perhaps Ezine could prove to her that Obi was not the man she thought he was. Then she might agree to go back on the marriage, and they could all pretend like none of this had ever happened. Ezine knew there was only one surefire way to learn whatever secrets Obi was hiding. She would have to go see the Unam Okuk, the Society of Witches. As soon as the sun rose, Ezine creeped out through the courtyard. When she approached the outer wall of the compound, she heard a commotion. Ezine flung open the front gate to see her daughter and new son-in-law embroiled in a furious argument with her husband. All three went silent at the sight of her. Ezine raised an eyebrow, and Afyang pointed an accusatory finger at Obi. He told her the young man was trying to make off with their daughter. Afyang began to protest, and in moments all three of them were shouting at each other again. Suddenly, Ezine felt very lightheaded. She knew Obi might try to take Afyang back to his home eventually, but she didn't think it would be so soon. She had to do something. If only she could keep Afyang from leaving before they had a chance to visit the Unam Okuk. Ezine stepped in between the young couple and her husband. She put out her hand and suggested in the calmest voice she could muster that they all take a deep breath. She turned to Obi and said that of course it was his right to take his wife wherever he wanted, but it would be rude to leave without any breakfast. Afyang looked skeptical, but Obi nodded pleasantly. Ezine continued, "I was on my way to the market anyway. If you'll only wait for me to buy some plantains and beef, I'll make a big pot of ukong ukom to send you off with." Obi looked pleased with that. Afyong was frowning doubtfully. Efyong also looked skeptical. She squeezed his hand and gave him a meaningful look before insisting he come with her. Obi seemed completely oblivious. He said they'd be delighted to taste her ukong ukom and didn't mind waiting. Ezine thanked him and pulled her reluctant husband away. Once they were out of earshot, Ezine explained how she planned to seek the advice of the Unam Okuk. She knew if she could get the newlyweds to stay a little longer, the witches would tell her how to break Obi's hold on their daughter. Efyong looked nervously back at the house. He hoped she was right. Ezine's heart pounded as she and her husband neared their destination. The house was large, with an enormous conical roof. All her life she'd heard about the incredible power of this secret society of witches who lived on the outskirts of Calabar. But this was the first time she'd ever been to see them. An old man with empty black eye sockets was standing outside. As they approached, he pointed wordlessly toward the entranceway. A raffia curtain hung over the door, but Ezine could see a dim green light emanating from around the edges of it. She looked back at her husband for reassurance, but he seemed just as nervous as she was. Ezine took a deep breath and pulled the curtain aside. The air in the witch's house was close and hot. The only thing Ezine could see inside was a glowing green kettle and the horrific specter illuminated above it. It was shaped like a man, but it looked as though its skin had been peeled from its body. When the thing spoke, Ezine was surprised to find that it had a normal human voice. It asked what she wanted to know about her daughter's husband and laughed when she did not respond.
"I suppose you're afraid to see me without my skin. It's a little trick we witches use, but if you like, I can put it back on."
The thing whistled, and the old man from outside hobbled up behind him. He wrapped himself around the skinless body, and all at once it was though the two had melded into one normal person. The witch leaned over his cauldron and began to chant. He tossed dracaena leaves and a small croaker fish into the pot. The mixture began to sizzle. The man turned to Ezine and told her she was right to be worried. Her daughter's new husband was no ordinary man. Obi came from the realm of the spirits, and when he took Afyong home, he would be taking her back there to Obio Ekpo. Ezine's heart caught in her throat. She thanked the witch, placed her payment on the floor, and began to back away. The witch grinned and asked if she didn't want to stay a while. Ezine stammered that she had to go home to stop her daughter from leaving. At that, the witch broke into great peals of laughter.
"Don't you know, my dear? It's already too late. They left the minute you were out of sight."
Coming up, Afyong meets some of her husband's unsavory acquaintances. Now the conclusion to the story. Afyong and her new husband had been traveling for weeks through a barren landscape when they came to a small hole in the ground. Obi told her that she had to jump in. She hadn't liked the idea, but she also wasn't sure that she had a choice. Even if she'd wanted to go back to her parents' house, she had no idea how to get there anymore. Afyong hadn't listened when her parents warned her about marrying a stranger. She hadn't worried when he said they needed to leave for his homeland right away. She wasn't even concerned when he'd seemed unpleasant on the journey there. Now, though, as she slid down a muddy hole that Obi claimed would lead them home, she was beginning to feel pangs of doubt. Obi's hand slipped away from her. She called out to him, but the sound was lost in the rushing wind that filled the tunnel. She landed with a thump on a rocky stretch of ground. She blinked and looked out at the landscape. The land sloped downwards in a rocky mountainside that went on and on until it ended in nothingness. It was freezing cold, and the air was thick with a fog that stank like rotting meat. For a moment, Afyong didn't move. This couldn't be her new home. Obi must have gotten lost. She picked herself up and looked around for her husband. A moment later, she spotted his familiar shape moving toward her through the dimly lit landscape. Afyong studied his face. Why didn't he look confused or upset? Out of the corner of her eye, she noticed a hulking figure covered in ragged brown tassels. When it turned around, Afyong had to stifle a gasp. It was an Okpa Ekpo, an evil spirit. It had a face like a wooden mask and bloody sockets where its eyes should have been. She watched as the creature approached Obi. Then, to her horror, the two embraced like old friends. They spoke for a moment, and the creature pulled out a machete. Obi held out his arms, and one after the other, it hacked them off. As the machete sliced through, it made a wet, grating, ripping sound. When it was finished, the thing patted him on the back and walked off, gnawing on one of the arms as it went. Afyong turned to retch into a nearby crevice. When she looked up, she saw something that made her blood run cold. Making their way up the slope were three more creatures. One had the lower body of a man, but a tangled mass of writhing snakes emerging from its torso. Another had no facial features, only a gaping black maw set into the translucent white skin of its forehead. The hole was lined with sharp white teeth, and a blood-red tongue hung down to its shoulders. The third was a scuttling insect the size of a dog. It had a dozen phlegm-colored legs, and for a head, two bulbous white sacs with bright red pincers between them. Growing out of the insect's backside was a twisted, agonized, human face. Afyong didn't give her now crippled husband a second thought. She ducked behind a large boulder and closed her eyes as tight as she could. She mentally prepared herself for the sound of Obi's death. To her surprise, she heard laughter and cheerful greetings instead. Though she was still petrified, Afyong's curiosity got the better of her. She peeked up over the rock to see the snake man pull out an enormous knife. Afyong's mouth fell open as Obi laid down in front of him. The thing chopped off his legs, sawing through the bone with a sickening crunch. It handed the knife to the featureless creature, who severed Obi's head from his body. Finally, the insect creature used its pincers to slice through his face. It slurped the skin off Obi's head, and all that was left behind was a grinning, white skull. Afyong sunk down behind the rock and listened in terror as the skull discussed his beautiful new wife. One of the creatures asked about when they could eat her. Obi admonished them that she was not for eating, unless she got boring or made herself a nuisance. Eventually, the three creatures went their separate ways. As soon as she was sure they were gone, Afyong stomped over to what remained of her husband. She picked him up in one hand and demanded to know what was going on. The skull giggled. He explained how he'd borrowed a handsome body from his friends because he'd heard about a lovely young woman in Calabar who was only interested in looks and charm. For a moment, Afyong just stared at him. Tears began to prick at her eyes. She'd never felt so foolish in her life. Afyong told the skull she should dash him into 1,000 pieces. The skull cackled maniacally. He said if she did, it wouldn't be long before his friends found her.
Living human flesh is the rarest delicacy to them. Face it, you won't make it far without me.
For a moment, Afyong considered crushing him anyway, but then her shoulders sank. She put him down. Afyong knew he was right. She told Obi to take her to his home. This was the worst day of her life, and all she wanted was to lie down. The skull cheerfully rolled down the mountain. Afyong followed behind him, cursing the ball of bone with every step. The skull's home was a wretched little shack. It was built of black mud and decaying palm fronds. The sight of it made Afyong think of home, and suddenly she was overwhelmed with regret. Obi's mother greeted them at the door. Afyong was surprised to find that she was a perfectly ordinary old woman sitting on a stool by the porch. As soon as they arrived at the house, Obi told Afyong he'd spent more than enough time with her in the past week. He bounced off down the mountainside, leaving Afyong alone with his elderly mother. Obi's mother introduced herself as Minika. She offered to fetch a glass of palm wine, but when Afyong saw her struggling just to stand, she rushed over to help. Afyong suggested that perhaps she should be the one to fetch the wine. The old woman thanked her with tears in her eyes. They sat sipping palm wine on the threadbare straw mat in the little house. Afyong surveyed the leaky old roof. She thought of how much this sweet old woman reminded her of her own grandmother. She asked Minika if it bothered her that the roof leaked. The old woman said it did, but her health was too poor for her to fix it herself. Afyong got to her feet. In that case, she would have to fix it for her. The next few weeks passed in much the same way as that first day. Obi said something cruel or thoughtless and then went to be with his horrific friends. Afyong spent her time doing small repairs for the old woman. She fixed the leaky roof, repaired the broken door hinge, and polished the mud walls. Before long, the shack was a pleasant and cozy home. All this might have continued forever, but the skull had other plans. One day, Afyong awoke to a pounding on the door. She opened her eyes to see her husband's grinning skull sitting next to her. Afyong asked what was going on, and the skull giggled.
"Some of my friends offered me a trade. I let them eat my wife, and they helped me get rid of my wife."
He broke into peals of laughter, and Afyong's heart sank. She'd known her husband was cruel, but she hadn't thought he would be this heartless. Afyong ran to Minika's side and shook her awake. Through her tears, she told her what had happened and begged for her help. The old woman looked at her son, who was rolling around and laughing hysterically. She walked over to Obi and gave him a good, hard kick. Then she took Afyong's hand. She told the girl that there was nowhere to hide, but she could summon a great wind to take her home. Afyong's heart leapt. She asked, "Home? You can take me home?" The old woman nodded, but she said there was one condition. Once she got home, Afyong must agree to always obey her parents. The pounding at the door began to shake the whole house. Afyong hurriedly agreed. The old woman rose to her feet. She no longer seemed old and frail. Now she looked healthy and powerful. Minika began to mutter in a foreign language. Outside, the pounding stopped. It was replaced with a powerful wind. Rain lashed against the hut and thunder echoed through the mountain. Minikam motioned Afyong toward the door. Afyong wrenched it open. Outside was the wildest storm she had ever witnessed. The Okba Ekbo were nowhere to be seen, but this seemed just as dangerous. Bracing herself against the violent winds, she called out, "Is there any way you could send a milder storm?" The old woman shrugged and began muttering again. The storm died down into a gentle breeze. Afyong tearfully thanked Minika and gave her a kiss before stepping out into the wind. The air currents took her high up over the land of the dead. She flew over fields and forests all the way back to Calabar, where the breeze set her down gently in front of her parents' house. Afyong paused on the doorstep. For a moment, she was afraid to knock. She thought about running off again, this time to some other town. Then she remembered the promise she'd made to the old woman. Afyong took a deep breath and knocked. Her mother was the one to answer. At first, she said nothing at all. Then she fell weeping into her daughter's arms. Afyong's parents were delighted to see her alive. Ezine promised to cook all her favorite foods, and Afyong swore he would never lose his temper again. She was the talk of the town. The king of Calabar even passed a law in her honor. It forbade Calabar girls from marrying anyone from a faraway country. Eventually, Afyong attracted the attention of the coppersmith's son. He had a slight gap between his two front teeth, but Afyong said that didn't matter so much. After all, what's really important is on the inside. The disobedient daughter who married a skull is a fairly simple morality tale. In Elphinstone Dayrell's version, the lesson is that women should never marry foreign men. While it's impossible to deny this fairly regressive moral, the disobedient daughter has many more layers than that. For instance, though women in Efik societies had the freedom to choose their own husbands, those choices carried a lot of weight. Women who picked unfit partners might find themselves stuck in a bad situation. Divorce was a possibility in Efik society, but a woman could only obtain one if her life was in danger. Even if they weren't in immediate danger, a woman's match could go wrong in a number of other ways. She might find her husband to be impotent. She could be discarded by him, or even lose custody of her children. The practice known as the bride price meant that the husband paid a dowry to his wife's father for ownership of any children she had during the marriage. An ancient Efik woman lost much of her independence once she was married. The purpose of the disobedient daughter is to show women the consequences that could result if they didn't use that independence wisely. Through her relationship with the skull's mother, Afyong learns to do just that. By obeying a parental figure and focusing on the domestic tasks, she earns a second chance at choosing a husband. The disobedient daughter provides a snapshot of ancient Efik life. It demonstrates a woman's role in society and gives a sense of both the independence she enjoyed and the limitations on it. Today and then, the world can be a dangerous place for women. Taking advantage of your independence can mean taking on the risks of a world that often privileges husbands over wives. And it's especially crucial when the husband is a con man with an evil secret and dangerous friends. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back next week with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Tales, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Tales on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Kenny Hobbs, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Freddie Beckley. This episode of Tales was written by Zoe Louisa Lewis, with writing assistance by Greg Castro. I'm Vanessa Richardson.